Yeah, as yet, many of you have not embraced the divine love path, because the divine love path isn't about avoiding the law of attraction. It's about following your desires and letting what gets attracted come to your life and then dealing with it when it comes, emotionally, which is very different to the way majority are acting. The majority are acting like they can control their law of attraction. So what they do is they don't do things, or they do things knowing that there will be a specific outcome from that, and all that is fear. So Graham and Jen will come too for them.
Yeah,
I might wait till they come.
I'm hoping they're taking Jen's caravan right now, so let's see if they get back.
Did you see them go out?
Well, they're on their way, weren't they? Jen was on their way.
That was hours ago, though.
Yeah. Did you say you're having a look at books down there?
No, the whole.
It's a well-known area for people camping on property, and it's obviously a problem that's been, the council is obviously wanting to deal with it. So, and that's fine. Like, at the end of the day, there's all these people disobeying the law. You can't really expect any different, really. Sooner or later, there's going to be some kind of attitude about it.
I wonder if we are in the final straw, isn't it?
Possibly. Because they would have received complaints. I know they have received complaints.
Is this about us?
Yep.
Yeah, because it's like one person living on the property very different. Are you living on the property?
Yeah. Door changes
the house. No, not really. In sense, like, you can have people camping on the property if there is a house on the property, but, you know, again, you know, if they're camping for a long time, unless there is a house built, they're not really allowed to camp for a long time. Yeah, of course. And there's something I wanted to discuss with you guys today, because the reality is none of this probably would have happened if you had all been in a state of love when you came here. So we'll talk about that for a bit. Usually it's fear of the future, certainly.
And when it happens, you mentioned feeling them yourself, but do you have an intent to feel when you feel them in yourself and yourself? What do you, you just feel them? Is that what you do?
Yeah, oftentimes people are asking questions about how do you go about feeling this, or how do you, the truth is, if you don't have any resistance to feeling something, you will automatically feel it. So the better question is, what resistance do I have to feeling it? So what's the resistance you have to feeling your fear of the future? What resistance do you have to that? So what causes you to not want to feel that?
Well, I've been having them and I've been feeling them, but I didn't know what I was doing with them once I felt them.
Yeah. Well, the key is to feel them, and you should feel some relief. If there's no relief, then you're not getting to the causal reason why they're occurring.
Oh, I don't know. I just feel the cramps and I thought, okay, just yell as they come.
Yeah, yeah,
and
that's the way to go. Yeah,
that's
great. That's all you need to know. Just feel. We have to open up this place, eh?
Yeah.
The reason why it gets so hot is there's no way for air to flow from the out the top.
Yeah.
And you need to have airflow. So you need
whirly birds, or
at least whirly birds, but you know, you really need vents around the side as well, you know, that, so air can come in and then go up.
Yeah.
And then you'd have breeze from every direction. Sorry?
Flooded.
Yeah, I realise that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
weeks.
Yeah. But if everything's designed properly, yeah, you're right. There's not been a lot of thought at all at this point, which is fine, you know. Like, that's how most people operate,
yeah,
without much thought. But what we want to do is change that. So. Yeah. So, did they actually go back to the coast, the guys?
Graham
and Jen?
No.
Oh, just across to Peter's property?
Yeah. Yes, to Peter's property.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Peter's offered, you know, quite a few people space for their caravans to be stored.
Right.
Not
to live in.
Not to live in.
Just stored temporarily.
Yeah.
To say where? Here.
Yeah.
Do you want? Just from a few people
he's living.
Yeah.
Yeah. One day people will learn that a lot of what Peter is doing is always having a self-benefit first. Yeah, people don't deal with their emotional injuries. Just keeps on going the way it was.
It's all right.
Snowball.
And the truth is, with this property, if we don't use it as an opportunity to deal with our injuries, then it just becomes like any other property that's used for a natural love purpose, and that's not what we want to do. Yeah.
Oh, over that one.
Yeah. You've had plenty of experience with that, haven't you? Used to hear a mobile phone. Up at our place they don't work. So. G'day.
This is very solemn.
G'day mate, how you doing?
Tight.
No, we were just wondering where
Graham and Jen.
They just told me, so they're on their way.
Oh, okay. It's funny how the cyclones just suck all the moisture out of the air, eh?
Yeah.
So we haven't even had storms. Normally we'd be having storms. You don't even get the storms, you know what I mean? Like, when there's a cyclone.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, for about 1,200 kilometres from the storm, generally, they suck all the moisture out of the air, don't they?
Yeah.
So you don't get rain for weeks that you'd normally get, you know. Normally this time of the year we'd be having like two or three thunderstorms a week.
Well, we were. Yeah.
In the afternoon.
Yeah, usually by the evening, you know, they come rolling in. Yeah. But with the cyclones, you won't see any for sort of weeks on end.
So all my processing for the cyclone was in vain.
All your processing for the cyclone.
I was terrified, but it was great because I went somewhere and then for a year.
Yeah, a lot of people are so terrified. I was just in town today, and there were people stopping in the aisles in the shopping centre discussing the cyclone, and you know, you could feel their fear in the discussions. Yeah. You know? Well, yeah, a lot of people down here are processing fear about a cyclone that's like, what, 1,500 kilometres away or whatever it is. Yeah. No. Oh, we may get cyclones here in the future, certainly. And we're certainly going to get earthquake events here in the future. So, but there may be only a couple. Yeah, we've got to be prepared for some things, but not from a place of fear, you know. Yeah.
One of the ladies in the nursing home was saying that the cyclone has been through here in her lifetime.
Yeah, they had one through here in, I think, 94 or something like that as well. So apparently it rained so hard that most of the creeks here were like rivers flowing down the side of the hills, and a lot of the kids were getting in boats and going down the creeks. Like a rapid, you know, like as kids do, right? So, there's been some pretty big rains here in the past. Well, I wanted to get all of those of you who are living here together, and I just wanted to address some issues of love with each of you. And I'm happy to discuss your personal emotions in this process as well today. So if you've got anything to raise, that's fine too, about personal things on the subject. But I was thinking during the week after Alex had made the suggestion that, you know, you make a list of people who have got no homes to go to now, and I send that out to the internet. And when I received the list, I was there typing up the email, and I was just sort of, I was just feeling about it, and I thought, could I in good conscience send out this list to a group of people when I know that the people who are on this list are not acting in harmony with love and haven't acted in harmony with love with regard to this property here? And while I must clarify my statement there, I feel that there are a few on the list who have acted in harmony with love, and I would feel very happy to send an email out just informing others that they have nowhere to go now, and you know, and so forth. But I feel the majority on the list haven't acted in harmony with love. And so what I wanted to do was just talk with each of you about what the loving thing would have been, so that you get some kind of a picture where the emotional injuries are inside of yourselves, and also so that you can understand why I have a degree of reticence to send out an email like that. When somebody else, imagine for a moment that you own a property, right? And unbeknown to you, people came and actually squatted on that property, and they never asked you for permission at any point in time for staying on the property. And they camped all the way over the property. Some of the places that you would have felt would have been really lovely places to keep pristine, and they set up camp there. In some cases, you know, did a bit of clearing around them and brought their cars in, and also all those other things. And imagine you've got a legal, like, responsibility on this property to live under council permits and rules and regulations, and now these people are staying on your property. What would you feel if that had happened to you? Now, I can guarantee to you the majority of you would have felt quite angry and upset. Does that make sense? and used and not appreciated, no gratitude, and all of those different things. And in actuality, that's what's happened here for the majority of you. You've come here not asking the current owners whether it's right for you to come or not, not asking for permission, not finding out what kind of legal responsibilities those owners have, and in fact trying to completely ignore that as a question altogether, and in fact almost saying to the owner, well, that's your problem anyway, you know, not mine, I'm just going to stay there. And all of those attitudes come from quite unloving places. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I feel very reticent in terms of you know, sending out an email for many of you to stay somewhere else, because if a lot of the people on my email list trust my judgment. Does that make sense? And so when I send out a list about something, they, and particularly about others and asking for something, they feel that there is an actual need, whereas I feel for many of you there is not an actual need here. There is a deep reticence on your behalf to take completely responsibility for your own life. And that is why you in fact came here, for many of you, not all of you, but many of you came here, so that you didn't have to take responsibility for it. And when you think about it, the entire time you stayed here, have you ever offered those owners to pay part of the costs associated with council fees and so forth? Have you ever offered to them that you do some work in lieu of that, or any of those kind of things? Now, I'd suggest to you that for some of you that's the case, you have done these things, but for, again, the majority, that hasn't been the case either. So anything that you've also set up here, a lot of the times it was only for your own or the benefit of a few of you rather than a benefit of the majority. And you can see the bigger things that were created that were just for the benefit of a few, and you can see the damage that does. But in reality, many of you are judging that damage, but not seeing in fact that you've done the same thing in your own little way. And if you had more money, what would you have done? Does that make sense? And so I feel there's quite a lot of issues of love here to address. Does everyone see where I'm coming from? And like I had to ask myself, like, could I sincerely recommend to others that they consider you staying on their property when I have already observed what you've done on this property, and on top of that, I can't see that the attitudes towards it have actually changed? And the answer for me became, well, no, I can't do that except for perhaps a couple. Like I know, for example, that Graham has, because of some of it's because of your personal interest in it, but some of it's not. You have had an attitude of wanting to do things and improve things, and I know with Dennis that's been the case too, although not always in respect to the people who own the property, but that's been the case. You have a desire to give. And so there's been a few cases where there is a desire to give, but on the majority it's more of a desire to take, and more of a desire to have someone else look after the things that you don't want to have to look after in life. There are quite a lot of emotions actually involved in what has happened here. And what I'm concerned about is whether each of you are looking at that and taking personal responsibility for that inside of yourselves. Because to be frank, all I'd be doing by recommending somebody, like recommending you to someone else, is basically recommending a person who would use their property in the manner that you've used this one. And to be honest, I couldn't in good conscience do that to anyone. Does that make sense? And I know in various cases it's a bit different for each of you, so please don't think that my comments are carte blanche and cover everything, but I think that it's something that each of you do need to examine for yourselves here. There's also, some of you even have the funds to create your own life elsewhere if you desire to, and yet you're still wanting other people to look after you in some way. And that in itself indicates that you're willing to use others to their detriment, but in a way that benefits yourself. And that is a very selfish motive if you look at it deeply. And we want to, rather than judging it, what we want to do is address those emotions about it. Does that make sense? So it's very important to me, once I sat down and felt about that, I felt it was very important for me to have a conversation with you about what I feel are the underlying emotions driving a lot of these decisions and choices that have been made. And there is a definite feeling of having had other people done things for your benefit, and yet there's not being very much gratitude demonstrated to those people who have done those things. So Peter has done things here to your benefit, even though some of it might have been motivated by his own benefit, which often it is, and he has still done things for your benefit. And Graham's done things for your benefit, and Dennis has done things for your benefit, and others have done things for your benefit. Bradley, the current owners, Diana and Rita and the Griffiths, have all done things for your benefit. And yet there has not been any real demonstration of appreciation for that. And instead, almost a feeling of entitlement, where you feel that you deserve that, or that you feel that, you know, that was your right. Does that make sense? And yet, if this was your own property, it is highly likely you would not have allowed other people to take that right from you. Right? And this is something that love would do. Love would always look at, all right, and this is what I said in the first century, we want to treat other people how we would like them to treat us, not how we have been treated, but rather how we would like them to treat us. And I am quite sure for each of you, if you owned the property, you would not like to be treated in the manner in which the current owners have been treated on this property. Right? And yet you've allowed that to continue for yourself. I could personally never have considered living here without going to the people that I knew had paid for the property at least. And I would have also sat down with them and said, look, do you know that there's like permits that have got to be got here and everything, and I'm happy to go and get them as well, you know, and I'd be doing all the work if I was going to stay here, basically. And yet very few of you, if any of you, I think, have done that with the current owners of the land. So that's why I wanted to address this issue with you. Can you see that? Like, can you see what the reasons are there? And I'm happy to address individual emotions about it, if you want. But I feel quite strongly that before I could recommend for most of you to send out an email to others saying you guys are looking for somewhere to live or whatever, I would have to actually see a change in emotional change in many of you about what you've done here and how do you feel about that, and also are you going to repeat those actions at another property just with another owner? Are you going to have a feeling of entitlement? The worst emotions I had projected at me 2 days ago during the presentation were from those of you who were staying on the property. And yet the majority of you staying on the property had no recourse to actually project anything at me, in the sense that there was no justification for it.
Sorry, what's recourse?
There was no justification for the projection. You have been given a gift by the owners for a period of time, and yet instead of demonstrating gratitude to the gift, you actually projected at their representative, who now said the gift must cease. Does that make sense to you? So that means that there wasn't much actual recognition of the gift itself. And in fact, it was a demand that the gift be given for many of you in your hearts. Does that make sense? And the fact that you can then project that myself when I'm not even yet an owner of the property, or part of the organisation that's an owner of the property, means that you're actually willing to project at the representative the owners have chosen to talk with all of you, rather than actually appreciate that this is a gift you've been given up to this point. Does that make sense? And for some of you, the gift is quite significant in the sense of monetarily, even, because you've managed to live rent-free without any without any expenses whatsoever, aside from perhaps your food and fuel, and even those things you would normally have to pay for, and yet you've managed to live without all of those expenses here, and yet there's not an appreciation to the owners to the fact that you've done that. Does that make sense? And for many of you, there hasn't been anything that you've wanted to do to the land aside from destroy it further rather than actually add to it. Now, some of you have had an attitude of wanting to add to it, and even if that was damaging, at least there was a more positive emotion in that, in the sense that there was a desire to give. But if you feel about it, the majority of you didn't feel that. You came here for your own self rather than for anyone else. So that was quite a selfish motive. Can you see? And what we're trying to do here on the Divine Love Path is to learn how to love, not learn how to be more selfish. Right? And the problem is, many times, is that the people who are giving the gifts often don't have enough self-love to address these issues. So for example, the previous owners, Peter, Graham, Griffiths, Diana and Rita, all don't have enough, and Bradley, don't have enough self-love to actually address the issue that has been happening here for some time. Whereas I do have enough to address this issue. Does that make sense? Now, sure, they should have addressed the issue, I agree, but that's almost like saying, oh, I've given a gift, but it's their fault that I treated it badly. Do you know what I mean? And so that, while that might be a law of attraction event for the person who's the giver, and none of them, by the way, have even spoken to me about this. That's how detuned they are from their own love of self, to a degree, because none of the owners have spoken to me one word about any of this. I am the person raising it with you, and the reason why I'm raising it with you is because I can feel those emotions there present to various degrees in each of you, and some of you have done more than others, and some of you have wanted to fix things, which is lovely, but some of you have also had a deep projection at me. Come on, AJ, get things going, get things fixed now, you know, we want to sort things out here, and you are not even understanding my role here. I have to wait until all of the hearts of the owners are in accord with each other before I can do anything. And I can't manipulate them into that. I can't manipulate them into deciding that they want to donate the land. I have to wait until that comes from their heart. Now, what's happened is that some of them didn't have that feeling from their heart, and so they got paid out by others who did have that feeling. But I had to wait for all of that to occur. And it is wrong for me even to push that process on any individual, because it's not my right to have people force people into giving gifts. Does that make sense? So that's why things have taken a bit of time to sort out, because it had to wait until the hearts of the people who were involved were changed enough to deal with things differently. Right? And the projection that you've had to resolve those issues more rapidly is even an unloving projection or a demand upon them. And the lack of gratitude even for ones like Peter, for example, who have given you quite a lot of gifts, right, over the last 18 months. You've all had this room, in fact, to meet in and to get out of the bad weather from if you wanted to, or whatever it is that you wanted to do to, in terms of be here, doing different things. And he built this, you know. And sure, now that cost of that has been put across to Rita, but there's another person who's done everything, like she has no consideration of what she's done whatsoever, really, and yet we all are now benefiting from her financial contribution into that. Can you see what I'm getting at? So it's one thing to say to yourself, oh, well, we have free will and we can go and do what we want, and, you know, this is meant to be a divine love sanctuary anyway. That's the reason why they said it up in the first place. And there's all these intellectual justifications that we could go through, you know, justifying our behavioural course of action. But in the end, the real issue is, was I loving to these people who are actually more loving to me than I was to them? And the more I criticise them, the the more unloving compared to them I demonstrate myself to be. Does that make sense? So would anyone like to comment about any of that I've just said? You know?
I've never felt gratitude. Like, I'm just not really sure how to go about
what it even feels like. Can I point out that there's quite a number who are in that condition in the room, and the reason why that's the case is that when we were often young, we got taught a lot of feelings of lack, feelings of, you know, we've got to get what we can get out of something while it's available, that kind of a feeling. And those feelings of lack eventually teach us to actually get into these dynamics with people where we no longer give, but we just take. And we don't even notice that we're really doing it. And we're not even, we don't even have a feeling of gratitude for the things we have received, because there actually is an emotion inside of us that we should have got them in the first place anyway. Does that make sense? And so that's a big emotion that we need to address. You know, the fact is that nobody actually, we don't have the right to expect anything from anyone at all. Government or health services or, you know, or people, private individuals or anyone, in fact. We don't have the right to demand anything. Everything that is given to us is a gift, actually. And we need to come to learn about gratitude by actually appreciating the gifts we're given. And that requires a lot of self-reflection, because most of us have had a life where we haven't had much throughout our life. We've had a lot demanded from us. So usually for most of us, we were born in a demand. And most of the time that demand coming from our parents has been, you're here to look after me in my old age, or you're here to love me, or you're here to whatever it is that the parent had the child for. And the children learn very rapidly that they're really here to give to everyone else and not to have anything for themselves. And that sets up a feeling of lack within them. And so whenever there's an opportunity to take something, they automatically go for it. And this is why you see in the world, when there's a sale, you see people beating down the doors and treading over everyone to buy the sale goods. Because they have such a feeling of lack and such an unloving feeling towards each other that everything becomes competitive. And they decide that, in fact, you know, when there's a sale, I want mine, you know, like there's a feeling there instead of treating it as a gift. And if you look at it, these emotions, which are present within many of you, have been a major cause of a lot of the lack-based feelings that the world actually has, and in fact to a large degree a cause of a lot of the wars that in fact we've had on the planet, the lack-based emotions that are present in humankind generally. So the key is to, rather than judging them as emotions, the key is to deal with them. So if you've not ever really felt the feeling of gratitude, my suggestion is to start to pray about that, you know, to pray about recognising the gifts that you've actually been given and understanding their value. See, one of the problems that we face is that we often don't understand the value of something. For example, if I can give an example, the original property cost of this property was around $420,000, including stamp dues, right? And then there's shares that got built and rainwater tanks put in and all those kind of things, all of which came out of somebody's pocket. That money came out of somebody's pocket. Now, for many of you, if you could imagine what it would mean if you had to pay out of your own pocket $420,000, how long would you have to work for that? So let's say you're well educated and you can get $50,000 to $60,000 a year here in Australia because you've got a pretty good education and got a good job. $420,000. Well, you'd have to take out living expenses and everything, wouldn't you? You'd have to still eat and do all those kind of things. So let's say you spend, tax comes out, then living expenses come out. Let's say you had 30 of those thousand every year to actually pay for the property. Well, 420, what's 30 in the 420? 3 is in the 42. It's 14. 14 years. 14 years you would have had to, of your own hard work, would have gone into even just getting this property, bare bones with nothing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you sit down and ponder that, you go, wow, somebody, collectively or individually, had to work for 14 years so that I could stay here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you started quantifying it in that regard, you would have, wouldn't you have more appreciation for the gift? Can you see? See, often what we do is we just say, oh no, they got money. As if that's some kind of justification for our ingratitude. And in reality, you know, everyone at some point has had to work for it, generally. There's very few of the people who have donated the funds for the property have actually not had to work for it. Or very few of them have had a legacy from a family member or something like that. They've had to get it from there. Does that make sense? So if I quantified it more, I would then consider, that's a pretty big gift really. 14 years of somebody's time. 14 years of somebody's life. That's a pretty big gift that I'm now sharing in. And that alone would drive me, I would have thought, to actually approach them and express my appreciation even for that. Does that make sense? And so oftentimes what happens, because we're coming from this position of lack that we have, that is often present here on the earth, and it's present here a lot in Australia as well, like this feeling of lack. Because we're coming from that direction, we don't understand, like, why do I need to be grateful even? Like, there's hardly even an understanding of gratitude. And so that is an issue, you know. So, and it's great you raised it, because quite a number feel the same way. They don't really have, not really had feelings of gratitude, because instead they've had feelings of demand. It's my right, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the emotions of getting what you wanted as a child.
And getting what that's the flip side of emotion, of never getting anything you wanted. So when you get everything you wanted without having to appreciate it from a physical perspective, what happens is there's a sense of entitlement that builds inside of you, a feeling that I deserve this from everyone. And so then the same thing occurs. There's a tendency then to go down the track of not being grateful for what you receive, because you feel you deserved it in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's very hard to actually have gratitude under those circumstances too. And many children have experienced that extreme or that extreme. There's very few children that have experienced a balance. And the balance would have been, when we were growing up, would have been that we were given things, but we were given things when we had a feeling of gratitude.
Mm.
In other words, we were given things and then we were taught the feeling of gratitude through the gift. And when we were ungrateful, we didn't get another gift for a period of time until we learnt that actually, no, we need to learn to become grateful for what's been done for us. Now, there's some children staying at my home at the moment, right? And what their mum and dad are trying to do is to teach them feelings of gratitude. So quite often the children come into the house and are spirit influenced by some negative spirits who've been, you know, with other family members and so forth. So they come from some other location into the house and they'll do things like, the negative spirits connect with the children and they'll do things like spit on my furniture or draw on my furniture or whatever. Now, the parents, what they're doing is they're going, and this is Jo in particular, what she's doing is hang on a sec, now this is demonstrating an attitude of ungratefulness. And so, like, we've had times when, I think they talked about it last Sunday, for those of you there, where, you know, they've said, all right, you're not coming inside the house to eat if you're going to demonstrate that ungratefulness. And they keep that in place until the child actually has a feeling inside of them of wanting to apologise. And they don't even try to encourage the child to apologise. They just wait. And sometimes, like with little Lucas, they've had to wait like 6 days. So he's outside for 6 days. By the end of it, he's starting to get quite distressed about it. But he still stayed outside the entire time, right, for 6 days. Not sleeping outside or anything, but just, you know, at meal times when they would normally be inside eating. And he had to eat outside by himself for 6 days. And by the sixth day, he had released enough of his own emotion to actually have a desire to come and apologise. Before then, he wasn't going to apologise. He had a very firm feeling, I don't want to apologise, I just, I deserve this, a feeling of entitlement. And because that, if that is trained into the child, with the child through these feelings and emotions when they're young, they won't grow old, you know, feeling ungrateful. They will have deep feelings of gratitude for everything they receive.
Can I ask, like, how much do you feel? Is that the sign of emotion?
The one where of entitlement?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very big for you, Alex.
Yeah, I know.
Very big for you.
I feel like I've got contrasting emotions often.
You do? Yeah. You have a very strong feeling in you to not give. To not give. And this strong feeling obviously got created when you were quite young. But you also have a strong feeling of personal entitlement, particularly with women. So you know, that's something where you feel, you know, you deserve things to be given to you, particularly from women. And so there's sort of things in both directions to look at there for you. Yeah. For some of the others, it's more of a feeling of just the entitlement feeling, or just the feeling of lack. And I've found in my own history when I was doing business that the worst people to deal with were the people who didn't have much money. They were the most demanding. They were the most unappreciative for the service that they were given. They were also quite often they wanted extra for nothing. They wanted something for free every time. And yet, if the same things were demanded of them, they wouldn't give them. And that's this key, you see, that golden rule that I stated in the first century. How do I want other people to treat me? Not how do they treat me, how do I want them to treat me? Would you want to be treated that way? And so therefore, why are you demanding that others treat you that way? There's obviously an issue of love there. Does that make sense? Yeah. And that's what we need to address.
So you found law of attraction brings appreciation of not having any gratitude or feeling in you.
Yes, it's very unusual for you to not act out a feeling that you have yet to heal inside of yourself. So, for example, if I'm afraid of connecting to my soulmate, then it's highly likely that I'll try and push my soulmate away a lot. I won't be open and vulnerable. Does that make sense? What's my soulmate, if he is open and vulnerable, going to feel from that? That he is going to feel rejection. So ironically, the emotion that created me pushing him away, which is me being rejected at some point in the past, is actually now creating the rejection of another person. I'm actually rejecting another. So this is what we often do. We often act out emotions that have been damaging towards us, towards others. And we need to stop doing that and instead feel the underlying emotion, which is the rejection itself. So, for example, if I knew that I was not open and vulnerable emotionally, if I could feel that I wasn't, and I'd know that every time I'm not open and vulnerable emotionally, I'm going to reject my partner, I would, as a high priority, deal with my rejection, of my fear of rejection. Every time you're afraid of something, you generally will do that same thing to someone else. So if you're afraid of lack, you will generally create lack in another. In other words, you'll demand from them something which actually finishes up causing them to have the lack rather than yourself. You finish up doing to them what has been done to you, in other words. And it's a very unloving thing to do, but it's the way that we act out most of our fears. And if you think about it historically for yourselves in your own lives, you'll find that that's been fairly prevalent. And it's something that most people are yet to fully come to terms with. How every fear denied within themselves is actually now acted out upon another, which is actually creating the emotion that hurts them inside themselves in another person. And it's quite damaging. Yeah.
Alice Miller talks about that, doesn't she?
Yeah, there's some very good books written by Alice Miller where she talks about these emotional dependencies and what happens as a result of them. And that's why those books are so good to read, because she has a very good understanding. She's dead now, but she has a very good understanding of the dynamics that go on when we deny the emotion within ourselves. Yeah.
What did you say?
Well, what's the worst word
for
Well, I don't know. Like, what I've had to do is, what I've done in my life is created lack situations, and then I've had to let myself fully feel them. So, you know, I've had moments in my life, even though I had a lot of property, what happened was that I couldn't sell any of my property for a period of time, and because the market was poor, and what that I was paying nearly $30,000 debt every month, so I needed to sell properties in a hurry to pay for that debt, and often I'd get 2 or 3 months behind in my payments, and it was going to look like the banks would foreclose and everything would all just fall apart, and then I'd sell one property, and that would pay the debt and leave me enough to live on for the next few months, and then a few months later I'd be in the same position again until I dealt with the emotion of lack. By just grieving it, by just grieving the different situations that came up in my life. Yeah, so I'm not sure how to do it other than that, because that's been my experience. My experience has been of my soul's created lack, and then I've had to deal with the emotion.
And also, I feel this emotion, we connect to the earth. Like, I look at the birds, they have a nest anywhere, everyone's at their home.
By the way, the birds don't nest anywhere they want, and the dolphins don't go anywhere they want. At the moment, that's not what's happening. The birds are in a huge state of fear, and they're very limited to where they're nesting at the moment because of our emotional projections. Ironically, our lack of emotions have denuded the landscape so much for many of the birds that they now can't actually go where they want, because even their home that they would have normally chosen has been destroyed. So it's not accurate to actually say that the animals even get what they want, because at the moment there's nothing on the earth that actually gets what it get what it wants. And the truth is that if we all dealt with this emotionally, the birds wouldn't feel that fear from us. And like at the moment, for example, we have one variety of finch in this location. It's a double bar. You've probably seen it. It's a little tiny finch about so big, white, with two bars across the front of it, two black bars, called a double bar finch. There were 300 years ago, there were 18 varieties or more of finches in our location. All the rest of them have died out because of our lack of emotions. The first human settlers, the white settlers that came here, the first thing they started doing was tearing down the habitat of everything else so that they could have a habitat. That is a lack of emotion that drove that. And almost all of the damage that you see on this property has been caused by a lack of emotion. Even the damage that we've done since we've been here on the property has been caused by a lack of emotion. A fear-based emotion. What are we going to do? What about earth changes and all that kind of stuff? You know, all those fears are all lack-based emotions.
It seems to me we've been in the lack for so long. Wouldn't it be
all of us have been. All of us have been.
Wouldn't it be just process like addiction?
No, because we live in the addiction of it instead. So what finishes up happening, Igor, is that we spend most of our life trying to satisfy the addiction rather than deal with the emotion. So in other words, I have a feeling of lack within me, but instead of feeling the feeling, what I do is I go out to the world and demand the world gives to me. Does that make sense? I go out and take from the world in rebellion. Now that is not feeling the emotion. Or I might just sit and cry about how little I have. That's not dealing with the emotion either, because the emotion came from my childhood. There's something here with my mum and dad that I need to deal with that have caused these things to occur. And it's the linkage between those things that we need to join. We need to do something.
For sure.
No.
When you said we're crying about the fact of the causal, like this just put you out of crying as well, because every time I hear something, I'm crying about the fact.
Yeah. The key, obviously, I don't make that choice myself. I just, if I need to cry, I cry. I don't worry about whether it's an effect or a causal. However, if you cry about the same things over and over again, then you're definitely not crying about the causal emotional reason. Because when you cry causally, you release the emotion and you never have to cry it out again. So that's how you measure the difference. Many of you are so afraid of crying, you want to firstly determine whether it's causal or effect or not. I don't do that. What I do is I just cry and let myself cry. And afterwards I ask myself a question, now have I cried about that before? Because if I cried about that before and it doesn't feel any relief, then I'm not getting to the real thing. And that's what I do. I then pray about that.
AJ, some causal emotions, doesn't it take like, you know, a few times that it comes up?
Sometimes, because we have different fears or blocks that certainly prevent them from flowing.
Yeah.
So, for example, you might start crying about a certain thing and then a certain blockage to you crying about it, that something that your mum and dad said when you were little causes you to stop crying.
Mm.
So that's different to what I'm suggesting.
Mm.
And this is why I don't have much of an intellectual thing going on in my head as to what's causal and what isn't. However, I do analyse it after the effect. I do ask myself, well, how many times have I cried about this? And there's been some things that I've cried about hundreds of times and I realise, I have not dealt with that. I have not dealt with that emotion. So I'm still going to have to try and discover what's going on here. I've got to pray more about that. I've got to be more open. I've got to look at my blockages to this more. And that's what I do, rather than getting all too intellectual about the process.
There's another question. How would you explain emotional processing, for example, to people struggling or a child or someone?
Well, a child understands emotional processing better than anyone. So can I give you an example? A child, you take something away from the child, what's its first response? Isn't it anger most of the time nowadays? So you go shopping with the child and the child, you're going past the lolly aisle and the child's already learnt about lollies, like, and they know it's sweet and not yummy, it feels good, right? And so the child's there going, at mum. In other words, I want that, right? And mum goes, no, you're not having that. And then what does the child do? The next thing generally is a tantrum, is it not? Like, so they have a big spit. So this is what, you see, we need to allow ourselves to do that, have a big spit. And then what's the next thing we do? What's the next thing they do? They start crying and they start sobbing their hearts out, like, they're sobbing and tears running down. And what most parents do then is shut them up, often by giving them the thing they demanded in the first place, which is a terrible thing to do, in fact, because what that does is it reinforces the injury. If you let the child completely cry it out, the next time the child goes down that aisle, it will not cry for a lolly. It won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you let the child completely cry it out. Now, that's how a child does it. The children already know how to do it perfectly. We've just got to copy them.
The
same principle, they are still closer. So by the time you get to a man, a grown person, it's the same principle. If I am not letting myself feel my real emotions here. So to be frank with you, on Wednesday, the majority of you felt emotions of anger. But you didn't allow yourself to feel them because you told yourself that you weren't allowed to feel them and you didn't allow yourself to feel them. Does that make sense? So instead, I got a barrage of anger, right, that you didn't bother feeling for yourself. Then what happens? After that, if we feel the anger, we can at least go into what am I terrified of? I'm terrified of not having a place to live. I can feel about all those things, can't I? Where am I going to go now? What are we going to do? Where are we going to live? How are we going to support ourselves? All those different things, right, which are all the lack emotions now starting to rise. And the first layer of it is the fear of the lack. And we need to address all these things emotionally. We need to feel them. And so we go through that process of feeling all of them, and then we get to some of the grief. Some of the grief is how I was treated as a child, how things were taken away, given and then taken away. You know, our parents had feelings of lack too. And whenever they noticed anything in us generally, you know, they either did one or two things. They pandered to everything because they had lack and they now want to give us everything. Or they say, we had lack, you've got to learn how to have lack. You know what I mean? So there's this real angry-based emotion from the parent to the child saying, you've now got to learn what I went through, you know. You've got it too easy, you know. Or I'm going to make it really easy. They do one of the two, usually, out of the unhealed emotion. And by the time, if you'd allowed yourself to feel firstly your anger, if you went home to your centre or whatever on Wednesday night and just felt your anger about, oh, I'm being kicked out again, all these different emotions start coming out. And then if you allowed yourself to actually feel your fear that was under the anger, a lot of things were, what am I going to do now? Where am I going to go now? Where am I going to live? All those different things would have come up. And then underneath that, you would have realised that actually, yeah, the real feeling is I can't create. I can't create for myself. I need other people to do it for me. And you would have got to that emotionally. But because the majority of you were sitting on the anger thinking, oh, it's not right for me to feel the anger, then what happens is that all of the other processing, of course, will never happen, and we end up just doing the same thing in another location, which is living in the addiction, getting another person to give to us what was given to us here, because we now no longer have it here. When in reality, if you had real confidence of yourself, in yourself and in God, you had real trust in God that God would always provide, and you had a real confidence in yourself that you can always create, you probably wouldn't even be here, actually living here. You'd probably already have a property around about of your own or something like that, you know.
It's like there's an automatic thing inbuilt in us to recreate everything we are.
Yes, we do. Yeah. And what's been a really good thing here, and one of the reasons why after everyone's moved off I want to take photographs and videos of the entire place, because I want to illustrate how the soul, you know, has created exactly what we now have here, which is worse than what it began. And so, you know, it's a very powerful lesson to see how collectively this is what's happened. The souls of every person connected to the property have created collectively something that degraded its condition, and we want to take photographs of that, because at the end of the day we want to remember that. We want to remember that this is what's happened. We want to remember this is what we've done. We want to use it as a teaching lesson later in our own lives and with dealing with other people. This is a good illustration of, look what happened. We were in this lack emotion and we did this and we did that, and look what happened there. Look what happened to the land. First it started off here, and then look where it ended up there. And you know, nothing that was really damaged got, everything that was already damaged got worse, and everything that wasn't damaged got damaged. You know, and this is all coming from us. It's all coming from our soul. And if we can see that without judgment, without like going into fear about the judgment, without sort of punishing ourselves, which is what the world would teach you to do.
Yeah.
When you do something wrong, what are you taught to do when you're little, when you do something wrong? But most of us, when we did something wrong, we either had to lie about it to get out of it, or we got punished.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we got punished, for most of us, physically. So in other words, we got punished with violence, generally. That's how warped it is. We didn't even get punished in a way that was teaching us. We got punished in a way that where the parent expressed their violent rage towards us for doing whatever it was that we did. And so what finishes up happening is we finish up with this attitude that we're terrified to own up to anything we've done.
Mm.
We're terrified of any judgment of anything we've done. We're terrified that somebody would come along and tell us we were wrong, because, you know, when in a childhood, every time we got wrong, there was some pain associated with wrong. And we're terrified of all these different things, right? And so now, as adults, when somebody comes along, AJ comes along and says, look, what was done here isn't very nice. Oh, I'm automatically, you know, in anger about that, because, you know, how dare you say that? Off we go. But these are all just ways of denying the fear and terror within us of all these childhood events that have occurred to get us to that condition. I don't have any judgment of what's been done here. I don't have any judgment about what's been done here. I certainly want to use it as a teaching lesson. Certainly. Because I think it's wonderful lessons. Don't you think? Like, it's a wonderful lesson. And imagine that in 3, 4, 5 years time or whatever, once our soul has changed, and also we've actually got an attitude, all of us have got a collective attitude of giving to the learning centre and giving to it in love. Imagine what it's going to look like then. And what we'll be able to do is compare the photographs, even, and illustrate this is how what happens when we all come with an attitude of taking, without consideration, with ingratitude, so forth. And here's the attitude. This is what happens when we're all now in this other place. Look at the difference. And you say, what, divine love doesn't work? Like, you know. But for many of us on the path, we have been in avoidance of our emotion rather, and in satisfying the addiction, rather than actually dealing with emotion. And in fact, that's why quite a number of you are here to a degree. Because it's a way of getting away from some things in the world that you don't like. Right? And in particular, sometimes a way to get away with not taking personal responsibility for your own creation. You see, if I can say, oh, I'm living on this place with 5 other people, then that place now reflects 5 people's law of attraction, doesn't it? Not just one. Now, if I had to come face to face with my own law of attraction, that would be a different matter, wouldn't it? Like, can you see there's a power in that for each of you, coming face to face with your own law of attraction as a standalone person without anybody else involved. There's a great power in that. And the power in that is you see very clearly and very rapidly everything that gets reflected at you. And that's what you want. If you're on the divine love path, that's what you want. You don't want to be afraid of that. You want to actually want that. Because if you get that, then you've got opportunity to change. Right? And that's the time you've got the opportunity to change the fastest. But when we try to avoid our law of attraction by creating things or creating events that skip us over the law of attraction, what we're really doing is just using our fears, we're using our intellect and our mind to create situations which help us avoid our fears. And on the divine love path, do you want to avoid your fears? You don't want to avoid your fears. You want to release your fears. Because if you don't release your fears, in the end, no real change has happened. And so this is why it's very important to, I feel, have this talk about these things. Which one wants to go first?
Oh, just on fears. Like praying to feel my fears, because I know, got a lot of terror and fears, but seems like not able to get into the shaking around stuff. Does that still mean like the fear will be in my body and then it'll pass, but like sometimes it takes like, you know, 10 times around the same issue or more? Does that mean
most of the ladies on the path are having a major issue with fear. And the reason why is because fear is something they've been taught to avoid at all costs right from a very young age. And in fact, one of the primary roles of men for a lady is to actually have the man help the lady avoid her fear. Does that make sense? So most of your mothers have the same issue. They created a situation. They only really wanted the man to help them avoid a lot of fear, right? And so fear is a huge resistance on this planet, in women in particular, to deal with fear. Now, men have a different way of dealing with fear generally. Most men have been taught that it's macho to do things that you're afraid of. Right? So most men have more of a problem with grief than fear. So in other words, a lot of men can feel their fear, but instead of feeling their fear properly, what they do is they take risky actions to avoid their fear or to live in the feeling of the adrenaline of it. Right? So there's very, very different ways generally that males and females have of dealing with fear. The issue you have as a female is that because of the deep resistance inside of females all the way through the planet and historically, Now what's happening is you've got whole groups of spirits in the spirit also very afraid of dealing with their fear. And every time you are afraid of dealing with your fear, you then attract a whole group of those women along with you, helping you shut down your fear. They don't want you to deal with their fear because they don't want to have to deal with theirs. And so there's collectively then a lot of resistance to fear. And yet fear is the main blockage to the real causal emotions that need to be released. Fear is the only, like, if you think about it, every single blockage is basically a fear-based blockage. And the key for us is to feel those blockages rather than intellectualising ourselves over them. So many of you at this point have been forcing yourself over them or intellectualising yourself over them. The way you force yourself over your fear is you go, I'm going to deal with this no matter what, you know what I mean? And you also then go, I need to cry here, so I'm going to, you know, I'm going to create a situation where I have to cry, you know, so you force yourself to cry, but that's not dealing with the fear. So unfortunately, the next time a situation comes up of a different nature comes up to deal with, another causal emotion, you've got to force yourself in the same manner you forced yourself the time before. Does that make sense? So that's one way of dealing with it, which isn't very productive. What we need to do is actually feel the fear itself. So that is going to mean you shaking, that your whole body is shaking often, that you're crying in terror often. And that's the emotion that most women in particular, most men avoid by adrenaline activities, and most women avoid by anger. Does that make sense? That's why there's a lot of anger. Whenever you're around a woman and you talk to her about her fears, generally, if she doesn't want to feel those fears, she will get angry. Whenever you talk to a man about his fears, generally a man doesn't want to feel his fears. The way he deals with it, he goes, I don't think I've got that. So that's his way of getting out of it, just intellectualising himself out of it.
So if you're not shaking, does that mean you haven't gotten to the...
Yeah, to be frank with all of you, if you haven't done much shaking, you've yet to process your fears.
Okay.
Huh?
I'm not palm sweating. I get when I'm really terrified, like a plane is about to crash, I'm probably feeling more that my palms are just kind of covered.
Not just that, you're going to have a very sick fear in your stomach. You're going to, like, your whole body will go hot.
Yeah.
There'll be all sorts of physical responses to the fear. And the truth is that the majority of people are unwilling to feel them. Now, there's a couple of main reasons why. Fear by society is perceived to be weak. So whenever you're afraid, if you're shaking, what do people go? Have you got Parkinson's? What's wrong with you then? You know, like, you know, there's automatic judgment of a terrified position. And so the majority of people on the planet are taught that it's wrong to feel any fear. You've got to make out that it's not there. Now, the way most men make out it's not there, they do risky things, and that's how they make out it's not there. For most women, they just get angry and bossy and demanding, or something like that. And yep. But also we've got to be careful that we don't live in it. And living in it is when we actually feel that the fear is real. So, for example, what might happen there is that I might be afraid, for instance, of a snake. Now the fear is not real. See, but we'll tell ourselves that it is. What we'll say to ourselves, but they're poisonous. You could die from it. So we tell ourselves these stories, right? And these stories make it appear like our fear is then justified. So we finish up justifying to ourselves our fear-based perception of what goes on. And while we justify it to ourselves, it becomes real to us. And because it's real to us, we then feel more justified to keep the fear rather than release it. So a person who's scared of snakes, for example, or scared of poisonous snakes or poisonous spiders, you know, they're going to justify to themselves the fear until such a time as they actually release it. Once they've released it, they will no longer justify it. It will be like, oh, I'm not afraid of them anymore. And ironically, now I'm not going to attract any of them biting me either. Because the truth is, as Mary pointed out last Sunday to a group of people, the truth is that everything around us feels the projection of fear as a rejection, right? And so every animal, every bird, every living creature around us, every person around us also feels our fear as a personal rejection of them. And it depends on how they're going to respond to that rejection as to what they'll do or what, how they'll react. Now, some will react by leaving us, which the majority of snakes will do, for example. And once they can't leave us anymore, how do they react then? They then attack us. And in fact, when you think about it, that's what most people do, isn't it, most of the time? If they can't leave us, they'll attack us. You know? Now, obviously, there's a whole group of people who just attack you anyway, but that's a different type of group. But the animals themselves are often reacting in exactly the manner that we would expect them to, given our emotions. So the key with a lot of this stuff is to actually look more deeply at the fears, and the talk that Mary gave is really worth listening to again or downloading. I'm going to be putting it on the net shortly, so listening to again or downloading the notes that she had associated with it, so you could just read through it and feel about the aspects of it. Yeah. So if you look at what happened this week, quite a number of you have been projecting fear for quite some months, right, about what's happening to the sanctuary, what's going to happen to the sanctuary, what's going to happen here, what are we going to do, we're going to be asked to leave, what's going to happen, and there's all that fear that's been building up for many, right, and those are all fears. Now, you've been living in them by not addressing them, by not letting yourself fully feel them and release them, and so by the time somebody comes along to have a chat with you about it, instead of feeling, oh, I'm pretty relaxed about this, oh, this will be interesting, see what happens, most of us feeling like, oh, what's going on now? You know, we don't like that very much. You know, like, there's a totally different feeling because the unhealed emotions are not released.
Can I ask about using your imagination, for example, to feel safe? If you just, in your tent, for example, and you use your imagination to take out thoughts to inviting you and...
Yes, or just imagine you're laying there with all the snakes all going over.
Is this helpful?
Of course. Yes, definitely helpful. Yeah, and you can stay and feel that emotion for some time. And my feelings are, if you fully embrace your desires, what will happen is your fears will automatically get triggered. If you fully embrace your desires. So, for example, just at the beginning, Alex, when not everyone was here and you said, oh, I don't think I'll be buying a property now, right? You were expressing your fear and that was stopping you from fully embracing a desire. Now you've been desiring to find a property for some time. You've been trying to convince lots of people to do it with you, which means that you've wanted to share your fears with other people with regard to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
When in reality you've probably got enough funds of your own from what I understand in financial situation to be alright, so there we go, there's one of the issues, isn't it? That's one of the fears. I haven't got enough of funds of my own to get what I want, so now what's going to happen? Now you might not realise, but actually, you know, if you're renting a place exactly that you like, come earth changes, it's very unlikely you'd probably be moved out of it, you know what I mean? and yet that hasn't crossed your mind because of the fears, you know. Can you see how there's all sorts of things that don't cross your mind? Well, do, yeah, yeah. But the truth is, what you've been trying to do is create it with other people.
Yeah.
So that means that you've been trying to avoid the feeling of being by yourself.
Well, 5 minutes before I came, I realised that my law of attraction is everyone's coming
in. Exactly. You try to organise it when one person may finish up going, no, and you try to organise another, they finish
up.
Yeah. And now it goes, oh, but now they're going to not be able to let me live on there. Oh, you know. And so now what's happening, you've acted upon a desire, you're attempting to act upon a desire, which is to get a property of some kind for yourself. So that's an attempt to act upon a desire. The fear is almost automatically triggered through hearing about Jen's experience with the One Day Council, right? And the fear is experienced. And now what is your first course of action?
Stop.
I'm not going to buy it now, you know, it's like, no. And see my course of action would be, no, that's a fear-based thing. So while I feel that fear, I'm afraid of what they might do, I'm afraid of their authority, I'm afraid of all these things, but I'm still going to go ahead because that's what I want. And whatever fear is triggered, I'll let be triggered, whatever it is, whatever comes up, I'll let it happen, and I'll embrace that process. And so... So the beauty is, if you follow your desires, and particularly the desires that are loving, any fears that you have will automatically generally be brought up, and you will need to deal with in the situation. That's how I deal with everything. Right? I'm not sitting around at home waiting to be triggered on a matter. Like that, if I did that, there's hundreds of things I've got to get triggered on. And if I did that, I'd never get triggered on most of them. Does that make sense? But by embracing the desire, now a lot of them start coming up quite rapidly as a result. And I feel the point of this discussion, though, is that we need to look at our own unlovingness, the way in which we have not been loving here. And as I pointed out, you know, the majority of us have not even considered what we've done and what effect that's had on the people who have owned the property, who have been the people who have put the money into the property. We've not considered the effect it's going to have for down the track now either, in terms of the council. So now the council is not going to trust us, and it's going to take time now for them to trust us again. Does that make sense? Because of these actions. So these are all the actions, and this is the trouble with unloving actions, is down the track they always create an effect which demonstrates that the original action was unloving. When you take loving actions, down the track the loving actions always remain in place. You don't have to change anything down the track with loving actions. With unloving actions, you'll always have to change something.
I feel like there was a lot of assumption about why someone can speak to
himself. I agree, but the question has to be asked, why did I make those assumptions? That we always have emotional reasons for making assumptions, and a lot of those emotional reasons are very self-serving, you know. Like, so for example, if I make the assumption, oh, I can go on the property, now that's a why would I make that assumption from an emotional perspective? From an emotional perspective, I don't want to know whether I can or can't, so I don't want to find out whether I can or can't, because I might be told that I can't, so I'm best just to go ahead and do it anyway. Can you see how that attitude in the world a lot today? Go ahead and do it anyway, and then when they tell you you can't, oh, it's all done already, I'm sorry. You know, it's like, but you don't really feel sorry because it was your whole intention to do it in the first place. You know? And whereas a person who loves doesn't do that. Like, this is where, like, as the guys know who I've dealt with regard to the financial aspects of the property, and they know that I have not put any pressure on them to donate the property under our care, under the organisation's care. Well, I've not put any pressure on them. In fact, quite often I've done the opposite, have I not? I've said to you guys, you all need to be very careful here and make sure that the decision you're making is coming from a loving space within you, and you really want this, and you're not. And I've talked to each of them. In fact, we had to talk just recently again, where I said to each of them, you've got to be very careful that you don't regret this decision down the track because of your own financial welfare down the track, like that you don't regret having given away that significant amount of money. And so we've discussed this at length many times. I could have, given my position that I had in the sense of, and also what I can feel to be their respect of me, I could have taken a totally different track, and the different track would have been, oh, you guys, why don't you give it to the God's way of love, you know, and why don't you do this and why don't you do that, and not mention any of the potential drawbacks whatsoever. Does that make sense? I could have done that, but instead I did the opposite to that, because that's what I would like to have been done with me. Does that make sense? And how I treat everyone else is how I like to be treated. And so if somebody come to me and put pressure on me emotionally to donate something, I would actually feel, no, that doesn't feel very loving. But if there's a donation coming from my heart, well, that's a different matter altogether. And so in my dealings with financial, this is why the financial aspect has taken a bit of the time to resolve. Because at the end of the day, people need to be given that time to come and deal with those emotions about it. Like for someone like Graham, for example, half of his whole life's welfare has been donated to the property, basically, you know. And so, like what does he do if he isn't really sure about that decision? How much regret is he going to have down the track about that? Now, if he wants a year to decide that, I'm happy to give him a year. I'm happy to give him 10 years if that's what he needs to decide that. Does that make sense? Whereas a normal person would look at the situation and say, what can I get here? Oh, Graham's got some money, you know, and he's got this sort of attitude that he wants to do it, and he's got the right ideas. Oh, I'll work with him a bit, I'll work on him a bit, and eventually he'll come around. That's the attitude that most people would take. That's not the attitude you take when you love somebody. When you love somebody, you do totally different to that, in fact. When you love somebody, you say, are you sure? You know, this is what's going to happen. What happens if this? What happens? One of the discussions I had with the guys is, what happens if the government decides to personally attack me and then personally attack any organisation I'm involved in, and then what they do is freeze the assets and all of the things of the organisation that I'm involved in, which happens to be God's Way of Love organisation, and all of what you've donated is just lost to the government. How would you feel? Because that's possible to occur. Now, of course, if we change our soul condition, the likelihood of it happening is much more remote. Mm-hmm. But it's still possible to occur. And so, you know, we've had all these discussions, haven't we, guys, mm-hmm. about those kind of things, about what do you want to really do? And that takes time to do that. And it also means you love somebody to do that. You give them the time to come to these choices and decisions by their own free will without pressure. Right? And the problem is when we want something, often for ourselves, we are willing to pressure. And we are willing to make assumptions. And we are willing to avoid, in fact, why we're even making the assumption. So while I agree many have made assumptions, we must look at the emotional reasons why we made them. And most of those emotional reasons are not very loving. Does that make sense? So it's very important to see that. Josh?
Is it just a matter of praying and praying and praying to get to a space where you're actually motivated from inside of yourself to go into your fear? Is it just, like, I'm feeling that my major problem in this part is just having the want to go into my fear.
Yeah, for most that's the problem.
And a lot of spirits lately have just been saying, Josh, pick one fear. One big one, and just keep praying and praying and talking and just focus on that one thing, and that will melt away and all the grief will come after that.
What has to happen, Josh, at the soul level is there needs to be a change inside of us where we're no longer terrified of fear. Most of us are still quite terrified of fear. Now, the change that happens in the soul level happens in a combination of ways. And it's different and unique for each individual, so there's no particular rules that I can give about how to arrive at that condition. However, what generally happens is we have to firstly remove a lot of the blockages that our parents installed inside of us that created our terror of feeling fear. And a lot of that is like their judgments of us. So, you know, when we look weak, how do people treat us? Most of the time they treat us like we're a stupid, weak idiot, and we need to toughen up and, you know, get on with life sort of thing. That's how a lot of the attitudes are of this world. And so what that does is it teaches us to put a layer over our fear of judgment. And it's our judgments of our fears that all need to be released before we will actually change in our soul and actually have this change in our soul where we want to feel our fear rather than we're always terrified of feeling our fear. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of addressing all the judgments that are in your soul about fear. And all of those came from your environment. We also have a lot of judgments about God and whether we can actually trust God or rely on God to help us through the process of fear. And all of those beliefs also came, which are all judgments, also came from our environment. And so what we need to do, and this is why it's a bit frustrating in this phase of the Divine Love Path, because it's frustrating because we're having to release the blockages before the causal emotion eventually flows. And unfortunately, it's only the causal emotion that will actually change things for us. And so it's sort of a period of time where we feel like we're not making many changes and we feel quite terrified. And that's very difficult, generally, part of the process to go through. When you get through that process on the other side, you'll actually love feeling every emotion and you won't be terrified of fear. In fact, you'll just view fear as another emotion that you can cope with. But it's an emotional process. It's not something you can intellectualise to do. And the best way to deal with it is by feeling your way through every blockage. So the blockages include how afraid of your parents are you? You're quite afraid of your parents in terms of their judgment. That's one of the things blocking you to your fears, feeling your fears. Because every time your dad, psychiatrist, every time your dad sees a person shaking, what does he want to do to them? Exactly, and he wants to then get you to take some medication, perhaps if he can prescribe it as well, to calm you down and make you feel better, and which is the opposite direction. So in your family, when the fear is starting to be approached, the response is quite the opposite to where God wants you to go, and that's what causes our resistance. And then, of course, that attracts spirits who are in that position where they want you to go the opposite direction as well, and before you know it, you're getting away from your fear. So the key thing with fear is to always address the reasons why you don't want to go to it. And eventually, when you address all of them, or the majority of them, you'll start going to it on a more regular basis. It's sort of like what I found with myself is I release this blockage, release that blockage, release it, and all of a sudden I'm starting to feel my fear, and I'm starting to shake, my body's starting to shake, people starting to say to me, like, have you got Parkinson's disease or something, right? And I go, no, I don't think so, at least, you know. and I'm just feeling shaky, and then sometimes I was shaking so much I was bouncing off the ground almost, like laying down on the ground, and people would be like ringing up the doctor and trying to, you know, people around me would be really concerned. So I learned, it's best for me to feel my fear alone, because everyone gets too stressed out about watching me do it. so I finished up learning to do it by myself, you know what I mean, and not talking to them about it, because that was better. I received less projections that way. And in that process, I learned to actually to have confidence that I can handle my fear just like I can handle any other emotion. So it's a gradual process.
The divine truth as an emotion comes in and settles.
Yep. And after that, you feel very confident that no matter what you're terrified of, you are going to be able to resolve at some point. And while I've still got some terrors in me, last month I've had periods of time where for almost a week I've been shaking. And I can feel a lot of those terrors are all about embracing my, you know, the reason why I'm here in a proper way. You know, I've been avoiding embracing it up till now. And so, you know, all this stuff with the organisation and all the things, they're all the parts of the reason why we're actually here to do things like this. And I've been quite afraid of all of that. I've been quite afraid too of doing it all when Mary feels she's not ready. In other words, afraid of if I do it, like Mary will just be more upset with me. Does that make sense? So I've been afraid of that, and I've had to deal with all that, and I've had to let all that go too. And now I'm sort of more excited than afraid. Yeah.
So. When we're children and we feel afraid, I just was thinking, you know, usually the parents' response is like, oh, it's okay. So like that comforting
is bad for us.
Fear is what locks it up in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, what God wants us to do is let the terror overcome us.
Yeah.
And when we do that, you will find you'll get through it.
Yeah.
And once you've done it once, you'll have a lot more confidence about doing it again and again until all of it's gone.
And we get addicted to that.
Yeah, we get addicted to the comfort. And that's why we also want to tell our story. So we often come to a group like this, and instead of actually feeling our emotions, what we try to do is tell the story. Telling the story actually is a way of avoiding our fear. You see, if I can get all of you to share my story, then I don't feel as bad about my story. You know, and so then I can feel like, oh, I can feel a bit more calmer about that now. When in reality, what we need to do is feel stressed out to the max about it, and let ourselves just feel the way through that. And once we feel that, and that actually takes a shorter time too, actually. Like I've found when I've done that, sometimes it's a few days or a week or whatever, but if I talk to you and talk to you and talk to you and talk and talk, I can be talking for 6 months and still not get through any of it. And in fact, most people do that. They talk for years about the same thing. Have you ever had a conversation where you've gone up to someone, even now recently, who you've known on the Divine Love Path for 2 years, and they still talk about the same thing that they talked about 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because they're still afraid of that same thing. Yeah. They haven't released it.
So we've got to take it straight to God.
Yeah, and also be prepared to feel it, not talk about it.
Yeah.
And I feel talking about emotions is highly overrated, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah.
I have a problem with abundance.
Yep.
So I can manifest, things come to me, but money doesn't come to me. And if I do get money, so consequently I've been on welfare.
Yeah, but it's not true, Jen, that money doesn't come to you. Because the truth is that in the last 2 years, money has come to you. But what did you do with it?
I gave it away.
Exactly. So that's the problem, isn't it? Mm. You feel guilty about having it. See?
Okay, so what causes that?
Well, let yourself feel the emotion. You gave some money to a friend who was in need, right? A woman friend who was in need. You remember?
Okay.
Okay, so what was the emotion you were feeling? And did she appreciate it in the end? Well, how does she treat you now?
$50 a fortnight for a $32,000 debt.
Yeah. But how does she treat you? Is she happy with you?
I don't hear from her.
Exactly. She's not happy with you, is she? So can you see how... So the truth is that the issue isn't a lack of abundance for you. The truth is that when you get it, you give it away. And you give it away to the people who are emotionally demanding of you and who really don't appreciate you. So that's the issue to look at emotionally.
So I find in the situation now, I'm on a Centrelink benefit that I've been on for nearly 30 years, and I'd like to get off that.
No, you don't.
I'd like to know how to do it.
No, you don't.
Why?
Because you like being on it. Otherwise you wouldn't have been on it for 30 years. You see, the alternative choice is to go off it right now and then feel your emotions about what that brings up.
Mm.
But you don't really want to do that. Exactly. That's what I mean. So you don't want to actually do it. You say you want to, but you don't. And this is where we've got to be really honest with ourselves. See, we've got to be honest. The truth is you say that you want to have some money, but you don't. Because when you got some, you gave it all away. And you've got to look at why. And it's all, a lot of it's to do with guilt. You gave it to a friend who no longer appreciates you either, by the way. I've done this myself. Like John the Baptist, who many of you don't know and never met, I gave $35,000 to John the Baptist. It was my last 35 grand, by the way, too. It was the last bit of money I had. He doesn't speak to me now.
In the first century?
Now.
South Africa.
South Africa, yes. I sent it. I hadn't even met him, and I sent it cable overseas.
Is he the one that passed, or
no? He hasn't passed.
Oh.
What? There's two Johns back.
Yeah, there's John the Baptist and John the Apostle.
Oh.
John. Does that make sense? Now, why did I do it? I just felt a feeling for him, of you know, sorrow, sadness, feeling for him. Like, oh, I feel sad about his situation. Sorry.
I thought I did it out of kindness.
No.
She pointed out to me that. I
wanted
her to love me.
Yeah. A kind act never produces pain for both the giver or the receiver. So
how do I get under that to repair this? Because I don't feel like I can move forward.
Jen, you haven't heard what I've just said, because I said you don't want to. So the very first thing you need to address with God is why you don't want to. And there's a very, very strong... No, there's a very big emotion in you of why you don't want to have any more money for yourself. Why you don't want any more than you currently...
It's about wanting to be looked after or saved.
Exactly. And you don't want to feel that emotion. So pray about that. Does that make sense? You want to be looked after or saved by somebody else. You view them giving you things as a proof of their love, in fact.
Mm.
You see? And it's not proof of their love, actually.
Yeah.
And the truth is there's people who love you who can't give you anything, and there's people who give you things that don't love you. Can we focus, though, on the point of our meeting, which was about our acts of love? I think I've covered it well enough for everyone to have a think of. So my feelings at this point is that I feel that I can't probably send out that email that I thought I would be able to send out 2 days ago. Is that all right? Yeah. And I feel that by sending it out, I'm actually encouraging other people to engage with you when you are yet to deal with the emotional causal reasons why you're in the state where of what's been created here. And on top of that, I also feel that when you do deal with those causal emotional reasons individually, you'll find you'll attract exactly what you need anyway.
When I went to the council guy pretty clearly indicated that if you move a caravan on or a semi-permanent dwelling onto another property, blanket, unless you get a permit, which they're not going to give, because they've got their backs up generally across the region.
Exactly.
You're doing something illegal, so in asking you to send out an email like that, you actually
would also be asking other people to do something illegal. Mind you, that's their choice in the end, but yeah, I wouldn't like to be involved in that choice. So and I wanted to, the reason why I wanted to get together with you now and explain it is so that you understood sort of the emotions behind it for yourselves as well. Does that make sense? In terms of what's going on for yourselves. So hopefully we've addressed that. What I'm hoping to do with what work we'll be doing around the property is that this is how things will be running in the future. Like, we'll be addressing the emotions involved in everything that happens, rather than just watching what happens and then say, oh, that wasn't very good. And, you know, we want to address everything emotionally as to what's going on. Yeah. So that would be good. You guys have anything as the current owners? Graham, do you have anything you want to add to that? I've already pointed out to everyone that you guys haven't talked to me about this issue. I know I wasn't raising it because you had. I was just raising it because it's something I felt. But yeah, I've already pointed that out to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
AJ, there's an issue I'd like to bring up.
What's that, Jen?
Peter's made me aware, and I don't know whether I'm the one to talk about, but some money went missing and he's drew, and he's chosen what to do about it. He had a donation container here.
Right.
And the donation container had money in it.
Right.
And when he came to pick up the donation container and the money was gone.
Right.
And he also lost an electric drill.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I feel it's appropriate for Peter to bring that up. But yes, it's something worth raising with everyone if everyone knows anything about it. But unfortunately, the way everything's organised here is that it could even be anybody just coming in and taking it who's not even associated with the property. So it's very difficult the way everything's been organised to police any of those kind of things.
I've had spoken to Peter about the money, and it wasn't taken, it was just put in that colour box.
Right.
And I spoke to him about the seeds, and he said it was okay.
Right. Can I point out, Jen, that Peter is not in a good space at the moment, and he is complaining sometimes about things that have not even happened, or he has already been told of what has actually happened, and that's his stuff that he needs to work his way through. He has a feeling of wanting to justify his position rather than he wants to still look good in the eyes of others, rather than I feel what he enabled to happen here was still good, although some of the decisions made weren't very good, but he wants to still look good in the eyes of others, and that's one of the reasons why he's still complaining about things that have actually been resolved, and that's something that Peter does need to address at some point.
And I know I have an emotion in me that if Peter's not happy, then nobody in the family's happy.
Of course.
It's like that.
Yes.
Was what happened.
Well, in your family, if Peter wasn't happy, that meant your mum and dad wasn't happy, and that,
and then,
you know,
Philip and I copped it.
Of course. Yeah.
So, thank you.
So the truth is that oftentimes Peter does know the answer to the question that he's posing with people, and he's just using that particular situation to justify an emotional position within himself. And it is something that he does need to address. He's done this with me many times, which is the reason why, you know, originally he was doing DVDs and now he's not, and there's quite a number of other things that he was doing that now he's not. And the reason why was because of the dishonesty in the transactions, emotionally. Not physically necessarily, but emotional dishonesty in the transactions.
Could you feel that these would be the same kinds of emotions that would have impacted my life too?
Certainly, but in a different direction. With Peter, he received a lot of this kind of emotions that Alex had from his family, and that is emotions of approval. Peter learnt from a very young age how to get approval from his mum and dad. And so he didn't go into rebellion with his mum and dad. He went into a place of wanting their approval. And he learnt that the way to get approval was you didn't have to agree with them, you just had to lie to them. You didn't have to agree with them, you know, in your heart. You just had to agree with them in your word. And that then got you out of lots of things. He learnt that. And he still thinks that that's what works. And he's really struggling in his dealings with me because it doesn't work with me. And so that's why he's finding it quite difficult at times. Now, I've talked to him about those things, so we've already had the discussions that need to be had. In regard to yourself, you and your brother went into rebellion. You found that you could never do what your mum and dad wanted. It was never successful. Unlike your brother Peter, for him it was successful, but for you it was never successful. And so no matter what you did, it always seemed to be wrong. And so in the end, both of you had a lot of rage towards your parents, which meant you receiving more of their disapproval than Peter received. Now the dynamics mean that for both of you, Peter has just as many emotions to deal with as you do. He just thinks he doesn't. Does that make sense? And I've told him that too. So I love him very much, and I feel very positive for his future if he's willing to deal with his emotions, just like I feel for everyone else, you know.
Hey Jay, after this interim period, will there be a use on the property for caravans and such? Because if there's not, I'll just sell my caravan.
The feeling I get at the moment, which all I'm going by is the feelings that I have from the council at the moment. I can feel the council is quite upset about people living on properties without building and obtaining permits and so forth. Now, one of the things that I will be doing is talking to the council about what I want to do in the long term. So we'll actually be drawing up plans of actual buildings that we want to eventually put up on the property. Now, those plans will go through a negotiation period with council. In the end, I don't foresee there being any caravans, tents or any of those other things on the property. However, I do foresee there being some temporary things that we will actually store, maybe in a shed like this or in the other shed, or in a shipping container, that will actually store what look like aircraft hangars that we can actually put up come different events happening. Because in the end, I feel the council, while over this coming year is going to be highly regulated, in time, the council will have a lot of things on their plate that have nothing to do, that have everything to do with what happens here in a global sense, and so they won't have as much problem with a lot of things. So what I'm planning for is I'm planning to have a lot of permanent dwellings on the property. I would love to be able to put, you know, 20 or 30 of them on the property, all along the bottom here in a fairly communal type organisation. But I feel quite strongly that won't be possible before earth changes come along, just because of where the council is currently. But I also want to have the potential for temporary structures here that are protective in nature, because I feel quite strongly that we're going to have some fairly severe earthquakes here, and so we want to have the ability to have these temporary things which we've stored in protected locations, which we can build after those events occur. And so in terms of caravans and tents and those kind of things, they may come in handy at a future time, but I don't see them being much a part of the property in the long term. Maybe a bit in the short term.
But in the short term, there might be a use for them.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the caravans, but certainly tents. But
because I was thinking I could just make it available for anybody, and it could just be a movable, demountable housing.
Yeah, there's no harm in you, as particularly as a current owner, having left your caravan here. I don't see. You have perfect justification for doing so up until the time of the transference of the property into God's way of love. So from my perspective, I don't see you having any problem leaving your caravan here. I do see the problem with you permanently living in it, rather than sort of travelling back and forth or being in other places, because that is in direct contradiction to the law for the property. But as an owner of the property currently, I don't see any reason why you couldn't leave your own caravan here. It's just like leaving anything else of your own here.
Yeah, but the council wouldn't agree with that.
Sorry?
No,
the council doesn't agree with that.
I think you must have misunderstood them, because they don't have any problem with you leaving a caravan here. They have a problem with, because that's just like using the place here as a storage place. They have a lot of problem with you living in the caravan while it's here, in a permanent way. That's totally different to camping here for a couple of days, which they can't enforce, actually. And there's no law, actually, that they can enforce you camping here for a couple of days.
So you feel like
on your own property.
So you feel like I could leave the caravan here and just close it all up?
Sure.
Don't leave the awning up, and so when I'm away, just leave it completely closed.
Yeah. And I don't see any reason why you can't do that. But it's your, like, this is the thing that you guys own the property at the moment, not me. And so it's something that you guys need to decide between yourselves, really. I know that's just the same as me, you know, buying a block of land and leaving a heap of anything on the land, just waiting there for me to use at some point in the future. Like, the council's never going to complain about that. What they'll complain about is, are you living there, and is there some sanitation? Is there some, you know, that's what the law that I left here is all about. If you read the points of the law about it, it's all about, you know, whether there's sanitation, whether there's the appropriate waste disposal, whether waste is being taken away every week, whether there's a proper toilet, septic toilet, and all of those kind of things. Which,
so what would be their attitude to just staying here for a few days at a time then?
I wouldn't
be concerned.
I don't see that how they could be. Reading the law, like, if you read the law, it's like quite plain that it's about temporary dwellings, not a camping location.
Okay.
You know, and certainly as a part owner of the property, you have a right to be on the property.
Okay.
More so than anyone else here, anyway.
Is that
just Chris Green? Yeah, you're part owner of the property. Well, you know, that's something you have to discuss with the owners, and I'm not the owner. So
would you see that would jeopardise the application for permits long term?
I don't think it would help it. Because and in the end of the day, I'm not going to go for any permits until such a time as it's transferred into God's way of love anyway. So that might be a few months away yet. It might take another month to set up the organisation and get non-profit status, and, you know, so it might be a month or two away yet before before there's actually the deed transferred into the name of God's way of love. And as soon as it comes into that organisation's control, then one of the first things I'll be doing is presenting. What I'm doing over the next 2 months is developing the entire plan for the entire property for 5 years' time, not for next week. And I'm going to go to council with that plan. Does that make sense?
So the caravan on the property at that stage wouldn't be an advantage at all?
Not really, no. I would love to take, like I said, some photos just with nothing here, but, you know, that's what I will do once I own the property. You guys, like Graham owns, along with the guys here and the other guys, own the property, not me at the moment, so what they choose to do is really up to them. And that certainly isn't going to impact upon anything I do, because once it changes hands, I'm a new owner. You know, when I say I am, I mean the organisation.
Mm-hmm.
God's way of love is a new owner, and so it's not going to impact upon what the old owner did. Does that make sense? Yeah. So what the old owner does has no impact upon me, really, from a legal perspective. It's just what we do as the directors of the company once, you know, as the directors of a non-profit, what we do from that time that we have the land under our control is what matters. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On Wednesday you mentioned you mentioned that if people come out to work here for a day, they can stay overnight.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask the council to do, yes.
So until that point, it can't be happening.
Well, no. See, that affects the current owners, not me. See, if we start to do things now, then that affects the current owner, not myself. And when I say not myself, I'm referring to not ourselves in terms of the directors of the organisation, the non-profit organisation. So, you know, what the current owners decide to do under that circumstance is up to them. My feelings are that I wouldn't probably want to antagonise the council any more than they already have been by what's already been happening. And, you know, there may already be some legal things to deal with regard to the buildings and so forth that have been placed on the property that haven't been sought council approval already to deal with for them. And once it changes hands, once the ownership changes hands, that has nothing to do with me. Like I, and it has nothing to do with the organisation. Once what we decide to do after that is what matters, and what we're deciding to do is we're putting together, one reason why we've walked over the whole place is we're putting together a proposal for the council that we want to present to the council of a long term learning centre here. It's immaterial of earth changes or anything else. It's just a long term learning centre, what we're wanting to do and what we're wanting to achieve. And some of the things I'm going to work with has been done here already. So there's a half built shed, for instance, up halfway up the hill, and you know, I'll go to the council and say, well, the way I've bought the property, there's a half-built shed up the hill. And if we build the shed before I change hands, I say, there's a fully-built shed up the hill. and if we happen to, before we change hands, we happen to fully build the shed and put in rainwater tanks up there, then I'll say, there's a fully-built shed and a rainwater tank up the hill, and I want to utilise that as a rainwater storage for this supply. Do you see what I'm saying? So it doesn't actually... The things that are done at this point in time, things can be done, and when God's way of love takes over the ownership of it, then we can just blame everything on the previous owner and work from that point, which is of course what you would normally do if you were just purchasing the land as an owner yourself. So you take the land as it is in its current state. You can't have any choice about that. Whether the council has had approval for it or not is really not part of it. You just take it as it is. So my feelings are we can get some things done now as long as the current owners agree to have those things done, and if, you know, if camping on the weekend while we're doing it is agreeable to the current owners, then maybe that's what may happen. But of course we've got to consider the fact that, you know, that's probably going to mean less likelihood of other things happening, but not for God's way of love, because God's way of love is a separate entity buying this land later down the track. Basically, it's like as if we're buying it, even though it's getting donated. From the way they treat it, it's like God's way of love is buying the land, so therefore we're new owners, and the organisation is new owner, and it has a whole new set of things that it wants to do in comparison to the old owner. And what I'm doing at the moment is developing up those plans, and by a couple of months' time I'm hoping to have those plans fully worked out. Now, there are things we can do between now and then, and that's something that I'm going to talk about with the guys over the coming weeks or so.
But if we continue in the same unloving vein as which prompted this meeting in the first place, then there's a lot of complication in that, and penalty long term.
Well, this is why it's so important, Jen. It can't jeopardise God's way of love in any way other than that many of the people who were associated with God's way of love were also associated with this. In other words, the law of attraction will get transferred based on the law of attraction of the individuals involved, but it can't jeopardise God's way of love from the point of view of we are a separate organisation to the current owners, and so therefore we, you know, are going to have everything completely different once it's transferred. That's one of the advantages.
I guess the feeling I had is that I didn't want to participate in a negative long-term impact.
Well, from now on, the current owners have decided, and this was something we decided Monday night, was that the current owners have decided to not do anything that would jeopardise the environment here, and we've decided we want to do a lot of things, if we can, before the ownership changes hands, to fix up the things that have been done. So there are projects here that will start to occur, where we'll start fixing up things that are done, but I feel that people living here is probably going to be unwise. In that time, it's probably best if we, you know, if we come here to do the work, we come here to do the work during the day, and we go somewhere else at night, sort of thing. Yeah. And
Well, Jen, your impression from the council guy was that pretty soon they're going to start giving on-the-spot fines to people on camping on ground without permits.
The guy was a person who goes out. There's two of them. He was one of them. He was from the Wandai Shire Council. When I mentioned that I wanted to move my caravan to Peter's property at Wilkesdale, his face lit up when I said Wilkesdale, and he gave me the impression that it was a place of interest. And he was, I didn't say anything about this property. There wasn't any need to. I wasn't dishonest in any way. And when I asked about the types of permits that might be available for moving my caravan on site, doesn't have shower or toilet, he said unless that I could verify that I was using the shower and toilet with the from the adjacent house, then if they came around and did an on-the-spot check and I didn't have a permit, which he said I was very unlikely to get. It would only be a 3-month permit if I got one under those conditions.
And I agree with all of those things, yeah.
6 to 12 months for the permit to be passed for a 3-month permit.
Yeah. Now, that's the reading I get from it all, is that if the place that you're going to does have a house, and it does have a house that's been, you know, something that's been approved of by the council, which has a toilet and a shower and all the the sanitation things that it needs to have, that as long as the owner is saying you are using those sanitation things rather than just going out in the bush, that there's not much they can do about you staying in the house, because that's like you just being a visitor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's
very different than you having a standalone place of living in a property that doesn't have those things, or that does but you don't use.
And he clearly indicated that the whole of the shire was being, in terms of semi-permanent dwellings, was
and you can understand why, can't you?
The regulations were being changed within the 2 weeks they were coming to council to be, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I sort of, this is one reason why I feel that we need to do things here by 2 weeks, is because I feel quite strongly that if something isn't done here by 2 weeks, where everyone is off by 2 weeks, then basically we're leaving Bradley in particular open to quite a number of fines.
And in actual fact, he said that they were starting their spot checks. And he said this sentence straight after I mentioned Wilkesdale, that they were starting their spot checks on Monday.
Yes.
Prior to those regulations, revamping the regulations, which were coming to council within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But that any other guy.
So like I said to everyone on Wednesday, as soon as everyone can move off, even if it's to a caravan park, that is better.
Yes. So right. I got that feeling immediately inside of me. It didn't come from fear, that I needed to take personal responsibility and move immediately.
Yep.
Otherwise, it would reflect really badly on Brad.
Yeah. And that's who I'm concerned about at this stage. Like, you know, it'd be terrible for him to hit with fines for every person who's staying here. He will be hit with those as the owner. And that's, you know, that's a big shame, actually. Yeah. One thing, though, that he could claim is that you're all squatters,
yeah,
because you've never asked him for... most of you have never asked him for his approval for your staying here. So that's something.
What?
You know what I mean? And can I point out to everyone that... some of you are reticent to move to a caravan park or something like that because you're afraid you're not going to be able to process and all those kind of things. But to be frank, it's probably the most loving thing to do at this point, to move as soon as you're possibly able. And honestly, the faster it happens, the less risk there is of Bradley, and therefore, like from a moral perspective, you yourselves should actually pay for any fines that Bradley incurs. The problem is that then Bradley gets a bad name in the process, which can't be repaired by the fines you pay. And so, you know, this is why it's so important that you have some love for him and act appropriately as soon as possible. And this is why I wanted to address this issue with you today, because I feel that there is this tendency to put off everything until you get a perfect answer, whereas actually what would benefit you perhaps more would be to sit in a caravan park for a couple of weeks and to feel the benefit of what you had. You know, that would be part of feeling gratitude for what you've had here for so long. Having to actually fork out some money now to stay somewhere and having to be next to people who come and go, and your law of attraction will ramp up a fair bit there and so forth. As regards staying on properties, like in our house, what happens is Cornelius and Jody stay on our property and they use the shower and the toilet in our house. And so, you know, that's allowable. But for some people, that's not what they're proposing. You know, that they want to sort of stay with their whole of their own facility. And that's the thing the council is worried about. That, you know, they've got all these rules and regulations about sanitation and so forth. And understandably so, because most people are quite stupid about those kind of matters, rather than being logical and caring as other people. They don't really care how these things affect other people. And so you can understand why the council does create these rules and regulations. In terms of this property, my goal is to present a long-term vision to the council, not a short-term one. And the short-term one that I do present will be a byproduct of what we want to achieve in the long term. So some of the things we want to do in the short term, which we are allowed to do whether we have their approval or not, a lot of them can be done without approval. But it'd be lovely if I can talk to the council about the whole process and see the long term vision. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And if they asked, I certainly would. I don't shy away from it. I don't see how it's relevant. In the constitution it states my identity of the organisation. So if they read the constitution, which I'll certainly be giving them, they'll read that I'm saying that I'm Jesus. And that Mary's saying she's Mary Magdalene. So if they read the Constitution, we'll soon see whether there's an issue there. But I don't see how my identity would affect why we would want to do, well, what we'd want to do on the property.
Like their question,
because it's a lovely my immediate response is because it's a lovely location to illustrate the points of what I'm trying to teach, which are how the soul changes and how that affects the environment and brings back a pristine environment. So I have an answer for everything, fans, as you would know, Alex. And as you get to know me more, all of you, you'll realise that there's very little that I haven't considered about all of this. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Deb?
I'm wondering about an exit student tent that I currently have, if that would be handy.
Sorry, the?
A good student tent.
Yeah.
Would be handy to put away in the storage containers for after earth changes.
There are a number of plans that I have, which I'll discuss with groups of people later, about just. the way I'm viewing it is looking at the situation with regard to disasters, not earth changes. So my like many of you are very focused on earth changes because you still have a lot of fear associated with earth changes, right? I don't have any fear about earth changes. To me, it's just to me it's just like a disaster, like a cyclone or a, you know, earthquake or whatever else, and all of the different teams that we'll be putting together will actually address every single thing that can happen, including any disasters. And so we will actually have a team that looks at safety issues with regard to disasters. We actually will have a team that looks at how to manage toxic waste after disasters, and we'll have a team that looks at how to manage normal waste. Right. So in the end, we'll have a plan for everything that could occur here, not because we're planning for world change events, but rather because we want to actually be responsible human beings and have a plan for everything that could be causing issues. So what I see is that, you know, we're going to have, like, around about us, we're going to have people's diesel and petrol going all over the ground. We're going to have people's pesticides getting spread in high concentrations on the ground because of them breaking, you know. We're going to have here it's not so bad, but there are things hundreds of kilometres away that certainly have that, but here it's not so bad. But there's all sorts of waste that we're going to have to know how to deal with. And what I want to do is make sure we have a team of people who are experts at knowing how to deal with every one of those things. Not because of earth changes, but because that's the wisest thing to do. Does that make sense? Just like it's wise to have a way of creating temporary shelters, because if our current shelters are destroyed in some way through some of these events, whatever the events would be, then it's wise to have a plan in place to overcome those problems. So what I would like to see here is that everyone sort of stops focusing on earth change, world change events, and starts focusing on, all right, what disasters are we probably going to face here in the future, whether that's 2 years' time or 10 years' time, and I can feel what they will be in 2 years, but there may be others, and what we need to do is plan for them, just like we'd be planning for anything else. If we plan wisely now, we are going to have quite a comfortable existence. If we plan unwisely now, or don't plan at all now, we're going to have quite an uncomfortable system. And so it's just a difference between how much comfort do you want, really. Yeah, a tent is always going to be useful, but what I'll be doing is we'll be purchasing perhaps 20 of such that are identical, which would make sense, because at the end of the day, it's then we only have to teach people how to put up one tent rather than 20 different ones, and so forth, you see. So you know, a lot of what I'm planning is going to be very practical, and you'll notice that it's very practical. And some of these plans will begin in the next 4 weeks. So I've got a list of about 12 different teams that I feel are urgent to set up, and so I'll be setting them up in the next 4 weeks. And I'll be setting them up by having a meeting with each team over the course of the weekend. So we'll be starting like 9 o'clock in the morning. And team number one has 2 hours with me, and then team number two has 2 hours with me, and team number three has 2 hours with me, and so forth, until we're done. And one of the first jobs of each team will be for them to actually ponder about what they feel the team should have to look after. And then we'll have another meeting afterwards, and come back, and I'll let them know what I feel they need to look after. And so, you know, there'll be a whole, and the reason why I'm structuring it that way is because I want people to learn to think, and I want people to learn to feel, you know, rather than just to take direction. And I want people to be involved in that creative process, but to be aware that I've actually thought of most of the things already, and that there is a good chance that we'll get a lot of things done. I think there's 12 teams all up already that I have put together, I think. Just 15 teams that I want to get started straight away. So whether we'll have enough people for all of them or not, I don't know. But certainly, yeah. I'll just read them out to you. There'll be an accident and health team, a building team, a documentation team, an earthworks team, an energy development team, a finance team, a mediumship team, a natural waste team, a nursery team, a safety and safety training team, a seed bank team, a technology team, a toxic waste team, a water course team, and a water resource team. That's at the moment. But that I've got another 35 or 40 teams that we'll eventually create, but they are the ones that I feel we need to create pretty much immediately, because they are all going to have a part in the plans ahead. And then the next step from the team is to define what the team does. And when we've defined what the team does, the next step is to sort out a budget by walking through the property to each team and working out what they're going to need to fix everything. Does that make sense? And then once we know a budget, the finance team will then be able to put that out. This is what we need. And if we get what we need, we'll do these jobs. And if we don't get what we need, we have to prioritise the jobs, which ones are more important, which ones are not. And so we'll be able to do all of that, I feel, within the next few months. There's a lot of work that can be done in the next few months. And one of the first things I want to do is the water resource team. We'll have a fair bit to do. And, of course, I want to start documenting everything, even meetings like this. You know, so the documentation team is really important to set up, because we want to document everything that's happening, not just important things, but everything. We want as much information to be available to other people who are going to be doing this in the future. So,
Angela, I know I asked you this question on Wednesday, but if you've not ever attempted, like the majority of those, but I'm not really sure whether I'm in clear enough space to actually join that team, and many of the other options are not things that I've ever, well, I'm not sure I even understand what that might
you just
be.
Like, what I would do, Jen, is just go by your feelings. Like, what do you want to be involved in? Like, there's no harm in people being involved in everything. However, and some of you may wish to be,
but
it's going to be in the long run be difficult, because in the end we want people with passion in certain areas to be in that area.
Yeah, see, that's what I was going to say. I mean,
this is where you need to work. You need to work out your passion.
That was the question. How do you
by feeling about what your desires are. Look at your history as well. What have you been doing in the past? What are your backgrounds? All of these things are a part of your passion.
Mm-hmm.
So allow yourself to feel about all those things. Like, I can feel each of your pure soul's passions and desires, right? But I'm not going to tell you what they are. Because if I tell you what they are, then you won't know whether they're yours or they were mine. Exactly. And what I'm hoping to do in this process is actually help a lot of you discover your true passions. This is the beauty of what we'll be doing, is that it will be a growing affair for everyone. You know, everyone will grow from the process. It's going to be quite wonderful, I feel. And as long as I stay in harmony with love and truth with everyone, in everybody, in every team, then we all have the opportunity to grow quite rapidly by actually doing some practical things together. So it should be quite wonderful being able to discover your passions and desires through the process. And there's no harm in you coming along to every discussion for every team until you work out, oh, I don't really go for that, or oh, I like that. There are some.
That's really, that's my question.
Yeah. There's some teams
that. Whether they
could
come along to everyone.
Well, I'll be sending out an email to everyone about all of this, so you don't need to worry about all that. You know how thorough I am generally, so so you know, just trust a little and see what comes out over the coming months.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a lack of faith in me that I'm going to find my niche and be able to feel that that's where I fit.
Yeah.
To the best of my ability.
Yeah. And like I said, we'll be creating a team for every type of endeavour, for every type of walk of life that you could ever think of in the long run. And so, but what I'm doing at the moment is I'm creating the things that are the most urgent for this particular location at this point in time.
Yeah.
So they'll be the first ones, and then from then on, we'll be creating others. Yeah.
So do you deem transcribing your talk as being as important as those?
Yeah, well, that's part of the documentation team. The documentation team will will be quite, it'll be need to be by nature a fairly large team. I output a lot of stuff, and particularly when it comes to working with every team, you imagine we've got 15 teams and I'm going to meet with every one of those teams within the next month, I would say. So there's a lot of output there in terms of like documenting what happened at the team or transcribing some of those talks to each team and so forth. So I envisage at the beginning that it's going to be very hard for the documentation team to keep up with everything that will be done, and we'll need as many people on board as possible for that team. But what we're going to have to do in the documentation team is prioritise things quite a lot. So that the things that I feel are more important get done and handled first, and then the things that are of lesser importance get handled later. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your thoughts at the moment, transcribing those?
Well, because they are also audio recordings, the urgency of having them documented and typed up is far less. Mm-hmm. And this is one reason why I will be recording every meeting with every team, and I'll actually be placing every meeting with every team on the internet. So every meeting with every team that we create will be on the net. So what that means is that by the end of it, we should have a lot of material, and whether people want to type up comments about those material or not afterwards, that's fine, you know. But I feel that's not as high importance as recording it firstly as it's happening, and then, you know, giving that to everybody so that they can all listen to that if they wish. Yeah.
In terms of earth changes and the internet and documentation and all that, do you have a feeling that maybe going back to the basics of like book format might be a necessity? You know, like, because...
Well, the problem is after earth changes, paper will be a high, you know, will be in short supply, obviously. And so paper is not something in the long term that we will be able to use in an economical way. And so electronic storage of information is fantastic as long as it can be reproduced. And certainly one of the things I'm looking at is how to do that. But these are all just details, Jen, and we don't need to discuss them today. And in fact, I'd prefer to discuss them at another time. Yeah. Does everyone write with what I've discussed, mate? Yeah, no worries. So I suppose that concludes our meeting, because I need to ride my push bike home before it gets dark, otherwise I won't see my way. But I feel that if everyone just allows themselves to feel about things that happen over the next month or so, I think you're really going to enjoy the process, you know? Like, but if you're afraid of getting feedback all the time and afraid of like being addressed, like I've addressed you today, then people are going to struggle a lot over the coming months. And if it works out that I want 15 teams and we finish up having one, then that's the way it goes, and things won't happen very fast as a result of that, because in the end it will be the cooperative effort of us all that actually achieves a lot, not a single person's individual effort. Yeah.
When I'm on this, we're learning this.
Sure, just email me and I'll throw you on the list. Yeah, yeah. Also, all you need to do is have a look at the God's Way of Love website, and that website I'll actually be posting all the details about teams and everything. I've already begun constructing how I want the website to look and so forth, and as that formulates over the next month, in the end, all the notes that I take about each team eventually will be placed there, and each team will have its own meeting notes as well. They're probably placed there, or at least meeting recordings, which will be placed there and so forth. So in the end, there's going to be a lot of work for the computer technology team as well to do, because I'm not going to be able to keep up with all of it and do, you know, the management side of it that I want to do. So at some point in time, a lot of that stuff will have to be handed over to a team as well. So the documentation team and the technology team are going to be quite big teams in the end. And once we become a worldwide organisation, they're going to be teams of hundreds of people, I feel. So, but it's important to get them very organised and very structured, which is what I'm going through now. The reason why I'm doing a lot of it myself is because I want to know what's the best thing to do and the most structured and time-saving things to do. And once I've worked all of that out, then I'll hand that over to the team. Thank you. Yeah.
What does your art fit into documentation or technology?
Oh, I think art's one of the humanities that fits into every location. So, you know, a lot of these things, there's art, music, theatre and all those kind of areas which are teams we want to construct. They all fit into all of these areas. There's some areas that are all-encompassing, like technology, for example, is an all-encompassing area. Documentation is an all-encompassing area. Art is an all-encompassing area. Music is an all-encompassing area. There are other things that are more specific, like, you know, we need to understand how to manage watercourses, for example. That's a very specific team in terms of what it would look after and its scope. And so there are some areas that are quite wide in their scope and there are other areas quite narrow in their scope by design. But we'll sort all that out over the coming months or so, and the directors will all meet together and we'll come up with some plans and put them to everyone and away we go. Yeah, it is.
Could I say something as one of the current when you guys are leaving, see if you can repair where you were as much as possible, fill in any trenches, and if you can possibly make it look like you were never there, that would be great.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In order to minimise the harmful frustration that you do offer, if we did manage to pack up, because I don't see being able to take the if I attend on the weekend. However, if I pack up the tent, like it's actually just storage on the property or leaving there and using it, and being able to come back during the week, do you feel that may be reasonable?
Well, we'd have to talk with the other owners, but you can only do what you can do, I would think. Just do the best.
I think each of you need to be very careful, though. If you were under threat of legal action yourself, how fast would you act? Okay, so make sure you act just as fast for Bradley's sake. Does that make sense? Like you've got to be very careful that you don't just put off things because it's easy to put off things and there's no one putting pressure on you. But in reality, it's an act of love to think, all right, if I was under legal pressure, what would I do? I'd be trying to sort this out immediately. I know whenever I get under legal pressure, and I have been under quite a lot of it in the last couple of months, like I've immediately dealt with the issues. So basically at the moment, Bradley is under threat of these issues. And we need to, you know, take our personal responsibility very seriously. So while you may leave things a few days or whatever, consider strongly why things are not being packed up as fast as you can possibly do it, and what else are you trying to do in the process, you know? So just if you can consider that, you know, that's an act of love too, to consider that. I know that many of you, if it was your own stuff being legally addressed, you'd want to deal with it immediately, so why wouldn't you want to deal with this issue immediately? My feeling is if the majority of you could have things sorted out by the end of the weekend, that is going to... obviously, I feel one of the properties they're going to target is this property. Well, they've heard about this property, you see, and there's been neighbourhood complaints about this property, So the truth is, you know, the faster you can act now, the better it's going to be. And yes, we can say, well, I'm packing up, we're leaving, so it's not really a issue. But like you mentioned, if it indicates that we've got a long drop toilet somewhere and we haven't covered all that up and it doesn't all look sort of back to its pristine nature, then people go, oh yeah, I think people have been staying here. What have you been doing? You know, like. And there'll almost be the suspicion, oh, have you all cleared out before we've come to inspect, you know, and who's coming back and that kind of thing.
Mm. And we won't be lying.
No, no, but that's the thing, is that if you state things as they currently are, you won't be lying, you know. Nobody is coming back, so you can state that, you know. That's the beauty of doing it all the way we're doing it now. And I feel that you just need to be really have a lot of love for the current owners, and in particular Bradley, because it'd be terrible to have Bradley's name besmirched in any way, just because he's been fined 25 times for 25 different dwellings that people have found on the property. And while some of you may have the funds and money to pay any fines that might come up, at the end of the day, each fine has an accrual effect with the council. So if you have one person doing it once, that's worth 50 demerit points, I think they call it at the moment. But imagine if you had 25 people all doing it once. It's no longer 25 times 50 people, 50 demerit points. They actually accrue it, and they accrue the fines in a sort of an exponential way because they treat it as a more serious crime. Does that make sense?
And so Grant's just bought his property, and he's not built on his property yet, but I know exactly his circumstances.
Yeah, but, you know, it's going to prevent him building, perhaps. Yeah, or... Yeah.
What's going to happen to some of the tenants that the people have left and they may not come back during the weekend? I'm assuming that there will be some people.
We've got to try and pull them down over the weekend.
Yeah, we've got to have a divided team to come and do it.
Well, I feel more strongly that we need to contact those particular people maybe by phone and just tell them that their tent has to be removed by Sunday night.
Actually, they're said to me that they're coming the weekend.
Yeah. But whoever, we need to let everybody know that it has to be done. It's really important that it happens.
I think there's two, we don't know who they are.
What
else? So there's a tent in the forest?
Yeah, we've worked that in Liz Poland.
Oh,
that's
Liz Poland.
Right towards Brad's. Towards Brad's.
You know, still structured across the foot? On that way, it's on the right hand side.
Yeah, no, that's
that
gone.
Brad's.
You know, the way? That's gone.
That was Brad's.
Gone.
Yeah.
And that's the tent, is that here? No,
that's gone. Okay, so there is one tent.
Tent
down here, the
road,
silver
yeah,
tarp, silver and blue tarp, like between.
Dave's.
No.
Okay.
No, Dave's gone.
Oh, yeah, shit, that's
no,
mine.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay. I know this question was asked last time too.
Go on.
Sorry.
Go
there's
on
another one. Straight down here.
Matt.
Yeah. He's going to come on the weekend.
She's coming on Monday, I heard from
yeah.
So she knows about the decision on Wednesday.
Yeah, but she's
only
coming on Monday.
Monday,
right?
Yeah.
That
okay.
Might be a
little
late. So maybe
yeah.
You can
maybe we need to contact.
Possibly.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. Yeah, perhaps.
Well, we might have a little chat. You know,
yeah.
Let you go and just have a chat about what we need to do.
Yeah, I feel you need to organise things as quickly as possible yourself. Yeah. But if you can also remind them that it's an act of love to Bradley to do this straight away, you know, like that, you know, it's the loving part of this that needs to always be considered. So,
and if they can't feel that, then there's something going on.
Exactly, and they need to address that emotionally. Yeah. Well, thank you again for your time, guys.
Thank you.
It's good to be able to have this chat with you, and I think for some of you it's good too to have a look at those emotions that we discussed earlier on, you know, affecting the decisions and choices that were made up until the point of coming here. Yeah. No worries.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.